And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is a Ken Hudnall show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West, the most haunted city in the country. Well, today is March 16th, 75th day of the year. 290 days remain till the year is over with. On this day in history, in the year 934, Ming Chi Qing declares himself emperor and establishes later Shu as a new state independent of later Tang. In 1190, the massacre of Jews at Clifford's Tower in York. And that was a fortified complex in the city of York. Had a sequence of castles and prisons and courts and other buildings. Built over 9 centuries on the south side of the River Foss. Now, the now ruined keep of the medieval Norman castle was commonly referred to as Clifford's Tower. Built originally on the orders of William I to dominate the former Viking city of Jorvik. In 1190, there were 150 local Jews killed in the pogrom in the castle keep. Now, most committed suicide in order not to fall into the hands of the mob. And Henry III rebuilt the castle in the middle of the 13th century, creating a keep with a unique quatrefoil design. Now, the York Tower, or Clifford's Tower, whatever you want to call it, was quite prominent in local history. It's unfortunate it's become associated with the massacre of Jews who had done nothing wrong other than being who they were. In 1244, over 200 Cathars who refused to recant their religion were burned to death after the fall of Mount Segur, which was a fortified town. And talking about the Crusades, there's very little said about the crusade in Europe that was carried out against the Cathars on the orders of the Pope. And that's where we get the saying, the commander of the Pope's forces was asked how to know Cathars from run-of-the-mill Christians. And he said, kill them all, God will know his own. 1621, Samoset, a Mohegan, visited the settlers of Plymouth Colony and greeted them by saying, welcome, Englishmen, my name is Samoset. 1660, the Long Parliament of England is dissolved to prepare for the new Convention Parliament. 1792, King Gustav III of Sweden is shot. He dies on March 29th. 1802, the Army Corps of Engineers is established to found and operate the U.S. Military Academy at West Point. 1815, Prince William proclaims himself King of the United Kingdom of the Netherlands, the first constitutional monarch in the Netherlands. 1872, the Wanderers FC won the first FA Cup, the oldest football competition in the world, beat the Royal Engineers AFC 1-0 at the Oval in Kennington in London. 1898, in Melbourne, the representatives of the 5 colonies adopted a constitution, and that constitution became the basis of the Commonwealth of Australia. 1916, the 7th and 10th U.S. Cavalry Regiments under John Pershing crossed the U.S.-Mexico border on this date to join the hunt for Pancho Villa. I discussed that yesterday. The whole thing apparently was a put-up job to justify U.S. military operating in Mexico to test all the equipment we're going to use in World War I. 1918, Finnish Civil War. Battle of Lankifoha is infamous for its bloody aftermath as the Whites executed 70 to 100 capitulated Reds. 1924, in accordance with the Treaty of Rome, Fiume becomes annexed as part of Italy. 1926, history of rocketry. Robert Goddard launches the first liquid fuel rocket at Auburn, Massachusetts. Used to be you could buy one of those in the surplus stores in Albuquerque. I'd like to have gotten one. Make a great display in the front yard. 1935, Adolf Hitler orders Germany to rearm herself in violation of the Treaty of Versailles. Conscription is reintroduced to form the Wehrmacht. Excuse me. 1936, warmer than normal temperatures rapidly melt snow and ice on the upper Allegheny and Monongahela rivers, led to a major flood in Pittsburgh. 1939, from Prague Castle, Hitler proclaims Bohemian Moravia as a German protectorate. 1945, World War II. Battle of Iwo Jima ends on this date, but small pockets of Japanese resistance persist. 1945, 90% of Würzburg, Germany is destroyed in only 20 minutes by British bombers. Over 5,000 Germans die. 1962, a flying tiger and lion super constellation vanishes in the western Pacific Ocean. All 107 on board are missing and presumed dead. 1966, launch of Gemini 8, the 12th manned American space flight and first space docketing with a GINA target vehicle. 1968, Vietnam War. The My Lai massacre occurs on this date. Between 347 and 500 Vietnamese villagers, men, women, and children, are said to have been killed by American troops. That was kept very quiet, but one soldier in the Lieutenant Cowley's command had a camera, and he took photographs, and as soon as he got out, he made his name. In fact, every senior officer in the 1st Battalion I joined had been in some fashion involved in the My Lai massacre. 1969, Vyasa McDonnell Douglas DC-9 crashes Maracaibo in Brazil. No, I'm sorry, Venezuela. Kills 155. 1977, assassination of Kamal Jumblatt, the main leader of the anti-government forces in the Lebanese Civil War. 1978, on this date, former Italian Prime Minister Aldo Moro is kidnapped. His captors later murder him. 1978, a Balkan-Bulgarian Airlines Tupolev Tu-134 crashes near Gabare in Bulgaria, kills 73. 1978, supertanker Amoco Cadiz splits in two after running aground on the Port Sal rocks 3 miles off the coast of Brittany. The largest oil spill in history at that time resulted from that ship splitting in half. 1979, Sino-Vietnamese War. People's Liberation Army crosses the border back into China. Ends the war. 1984, William Buckley, the CIA station chief in Lebanon, is kidnapped by Hezbollah. He dies in captivity. 1985, Associated Press newsman Terry Anderson is taken hostage in Beirut. They release him December 4th, 1991. 1988, an Iran-Contra affair. Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North and Vice Admiral John Poindexter are indicted on charges of conspiracy to defraud the United States. They were selling weapons, allegedly, to powers in the Middle East and using the money to fund the the Contras. 1988, Al-Abaha chemical attack. Kurdish town of Halabaha in Iraq is attacked with a mix of poison gas and nerve agents on the orders of Saddam Hussein. Over 5,000 are killed and 10,000 are injured. 1988, the Troubles. Ultra-loyalist militant Michael Stone attacks a provisional IRA funeral in Belfast with pistols and grenades. Three people, one of them a member of the provisional IRA, are killed. More than 60 others are wounded. 1995. Mississippi formally ratifies the 13th Amendment, the last state to approve the abolition of slavery. The 13th Amendment was officially ratified in 1865. 2001, a series of bomb blasts that took place in the city of Shijiazhuang, China, kills 108 and injures 38 more. The biggest mass murder in China in decades. 2003, American activist Rachel Corrie is killed in Rafah, trying to obstruct the demolition of a home by being run over by a bulldozer. 2005, Israel formally hands over Jericho to Palestinian control. 2014, the Crimea votes in a controversial referendum to secede from Ukraine to join Russia. 2016, a bomb detonates in a bus carrying government employees in Peshawar, Pakistan. 15 are killed, at least 54 are injured. 2016, two suicide bombers detonate their explosives at a mosque during morning prayer on the outskirts of Maiduguri in Nigeria. 22 are killed, 18 are injured. And in 2020, the Dow Jones Industrial Average falls by 2,997.10, the single largest point drop in history and the second largest percentage drop ever at 12.93%. That's a greater crash than Black Monday from 1929. This follows the Federal Reserve announcing it'll cut its target interest rate to 0 to 0.25%. Well, we got a lot of births and deaths on this date in history. Far too many to go into. Let's talk about holidays and observances. Christian Feast Day, Aban, Finian Lobhar, Finian the Leper, Herbert of Cologne, Hilarius of Aquileia, Julian of Antioch, Day of the Book Smugglers in Lithuania, Remembrance Day of the Latvian Legionnaires in Latvia, St. Uro's Day, Finnish Americans and the Finnish Canadians, and Austin 3.16 Day. Not official, but it's a leisure day, I guess you could say. Let's see what else we got. In 597 BC, Babylonians captured Jerusalem. Replace Eliakim with Zedekiah as king. 1079, Iran adopts the solar Hira calendar. 1249, the Servite order is officially approved by Cardinal Raniero Capocci, Papal Legate in Tuscany. 1322, the Battle of Burrow Bridge takes place. This is in the First War of Scottish Independence. 1345, the Holy Spirit glides above fire in the Miracle of Amsterdam. 1517, Pope Leo X signs the Fifth Council of Lateranum. 1527, in the Battle of Kanua, the Mughal Emperor Babur defeats Rajput forces led by Rana Sanga, which consolidated Mughal power. Babur was actually the founder of the empire. In 1689, a 23rd Regiment of Foot, or the Royal Welsh Fusiliers, is founded. In 2004, it merged with the Royal Regiment of Wales to form the Royal Welsh Regiment. 1690, Louis XIV sends troops to Ireland. 1730, Wilhelm Charles Henry Friso installed as Viceroy of Gents. 1792, King Gustav III of Sweden is shot by Count Jacob Johann Ackerström at a mass ball at the opera. this day in 1802, the first military academy at West Point's established through congressional act. It opened officially July 4th, 1802. 1818, the Second Battle of Chancarita. Spanish forces defeat the Chileans under Jose de San Martin. 1827, the first U.S. newspaper, Freedom's Journal, owned and operated by African Americans, began publishing in New York City. 1829, Ohio authorizes high school night classes. 1830, London reorganized the police force, created Scotland Yard. On this day in 1830, the New York Stock Exchange had the slowest day it's ever had. Only 31 shares were traded. 1836, the Constitution of the Republic of Texas is approved. 1861, Arizona Territory votes to leave the Union at the beginning of the Civil War. 1861, the Confederate government appoints some commissioners to Britain. 1861, Edward Clark becomes governor of Texas. He replaced Sam Houston, who was evicted from office for refusing to take an oath of loyalty to the Confederacy. 1865, the Battle of Averysboro in North Carolina, 1,500 casualties. 1867 was the first publication of an article by Joseph Lister outlining the discovery of antiseptic surgery. It appeared in The Lancet. 1869, Hiram Revels makes the first official speech by an African American in the Senate. 1876, Nellie Saunders and Rose Harlan fight the first female boxing match in New York. 1882, the Senate ratifies the Geneva Convention of 1864, legitimizing the International Red Cross and the American Red Cross. 1883, Susan Hayhurst becomes the first U.S. woman to graduate from a pharmacy college. 1900, Sir Arthur Evans rediscovers the Bronze Age city of Knossos in Crete, home of the legendary Minotaur. And on a day that will live in the memory of everybody who was alive at the time who saw it, Isadora Duncan in 1900 gave her first dance performance in Europe. It was in London, as a matter of fact. 1915, the British battle cruisers Inflexible and Irresistible hit mines in the Dardanelles. 1915, the Federal Trade Commission is organized. 1917, on this date, Russian Grand Duke Michael, brother of Tsar Nicholas II, declines to take the Russian throne. 1920, a one-acre park known as Baby Park in the Bronx is renamed Melrose Park. 1922, Egypt is granted its independence from Britain, but British troops remain. 1930, the USS Constitution, also known as Old Ironsides, is floated out to become a national shrine. 1939, Germany occupied Czechoslovakia. 1940, there was a German air raid on the British fleet base at Scapa Flow. French Vichy internal minister Pierre Puchot sentenced to death for treason. And in 1948, Billie Holiday is released from prison early because of good behavior. Don't really know why she went, but she got out early. All right. We've been talking about creatures of the night and monsters, and we're actually talking about wild men. And of course, no discussion of that would be complete without talking about the infamous Bigfoot, also known as Sasquatch. Now, if the North American Bigfoot really does exist, you got to ask yourself what it might be. Most likely candidate, Gigantopithecus blackie. It's a massive ape that lived in the distant past, which some Bigfoot researchers are convinced may explain the sightings of large anomalous apes in some of the wild, desolate, and forested areas of our planet today. There's only one problem with this theory. Mainstream science, biology, and zoology all assure us that Gigantopithecus became extinct thousands of years ago. But what if it didn't? In terms of what's known about this creature, we've got to travel back in time to a relatively recent period, the 1930s. This immense creature has the thorny problem of nothing less than male impotence to thank for its discovery. For years and years, Chinese herbalists and doctors, some accredited, some not, have utilized fossilized teeth to create cocktails that they claim can cure the embarrassing ailment of not being able to get it up, so to speak. And you got to get it up so you can get it on. Since the Chinese landscape is rich in fossilized bones, people have made significant profits from selling these items to apothecaries all across China. Well, it turns out that in 1936, a German by the name of Ralph von Königswald came across a huge fossilized tooth, specifically a molar, in a Hong Kong apothecary. Now, it's hardly fortuitous that it was von Königswald that made the discovery, since he was a paleontologist and instantly recognized the significance of what he had found. Not only was the molar giant size, but von Königswald, in that first look, determined that it came from a primate, a huge primate. He was also able to, in the immediate years that followed, he found a number of other examples and coined the term Gigantopithecus blackie. Now, von Königswald was temporarily and disastrously interrupted at the height of the Second World War, and it became a prisoner of war of the Japanese. But, in spite of that, he wasn't deterred when hostilities were over. He continued his quest to understand the true nature and life of Gigantopithecus, as did a number of other people. One was an anatomist named Franz Weidenreich. Now, in a 1946 book entitled Apes, Giants, and Man, Weidenreich made the controversial assertion that Gigantopithecus may have been far more human-like than ape-like. Chinese scientists also got hot on the trail of this creature during that same time. In 1956, a massive jawbone of this huge ape was unearthed at a cave in Luoyang, China. The result was that in a relatively short time, a great deal was learned about this previously unheard of giant. And maybe most amazingly and impressive of all was that Gigantopithecus statistics. According to the best estimates, the height for an adult male would have been about 10 feet,
and it would have tipped the scales at about 1,200 pounds in weight. As for when it lived, well, the estimates were somewhat intriguing. So you got the Pithecus Authority and biological anthropologist at the University of Iowa, Russell Jochon, says the next development came in 1965 with the discovery of 12 Gigantopithecus teeth in Wuming, a few hours' drive north of Nanning. The teeth were significantly larger than their counterparts from Luching, and the other animal fossils found with them suggested that the site was considerably younger. Current estimates are that Luching is 1 million years old, and Wuming is between 300,000 and 400,000 years old. As for when this creature is believed to become extinct, it's been suggested it was about 200,000 years ago, after having lived for roughly 6 million years. And on the matter of why it became extinct exactly, Aaron Wayman wrote it for the Smithsonian, the rise of the Tibetan Plateau 1.6 million to 800,000 years ago altered the climate of South Asia, brought in a colder, drier period when the forest shrank. Other factors that could have exacerbated this crisis, Gigantopithecus neighbor Homo erectus may have overhunted and or outcompeted their larger ape brethren. And at least one dental study indicates Gigantopithecus developed and matured very slowly, a sign they probably had a low productive rate, which can elevate a species' risk of going extinct. And of course, you could make an extremely valid argument that since people are still claiming to see giant apes in the very areas where we know Gigantopithecus roamed, such as Tibet, Vietnam, China, and India, there is evidence that this mighty hairy giant is still among us. Of course, it's now known as Bigfoot. Now, there's one problem. Due to its massive size, there's a general consensus among primatologists that Gigantopithecus walked on its knuckles in very much the same way that today's baboons move around. Bigfoot, the Yeti, and the rest of the monstrous pack are almost exclusively described as standing and walking in an upright fashion. And many of the cryptid apes in our world are described as tall. We're talking about creatures between 7 and 8 feet tall. Encounters with man-beasts in excess of 10 feet in height are far fewer in number. And on top of that, there are suggestions that Gigantopithecus may have reached and possibly even surpassed a height of 13 feet. This is far in excess of what's generally reported in tales of Bigfoot. Admittedly, there are reports from Tibet of a particular type of the Yeti referred to as a Nyamo, which incredibly is reputed to reach stratospheric heights of 20 feet. So is it possible Gigantopithecus adapted over millions of years to the extent that the original huge knuckle walker became a generally smaller upright creature, one popularly and famously known as Bigfoot? Maybe given the sheer number of sightings of anomalous apes in the precise areas where the immense creature lived, we might ought to give more consideration to that particular theory. Now, let's leave Tibet, Vietnam, China, and India and talk about unknown hairy humanoid animals seen in the UK and one seen in the direct vicinity of the ancient historical sites. According to cryptozoologist Neil Arnold, I've always wondered what type of manifestation these UK wild men could be. In the autumn of 2011, he said, a psychic lady who I know is a friend and who I trust accompanied me to Bluebell Hill, which is a very haunted village in Kent, a few miles short of the town of Maidstone. I know of several obscure man-beast reports in the area, which she knew nothing about. Took her to one particular spot near some ancient stones, hoping she'd pick up a ghostly presence, and still she felt nothing whatsoever. But she did state quite categorically that a few years previously, about 2003, she had had a bizarre encounter in that area one night. Said she'd visited Kit's Cody House, a set of stones, with a group of fellow psychics. Her friends were over on one side of the field, which harbors the stones, and she was in another area when she noticed someone walking towards her a few hundred yards away. and the figure seemed to be striding aggressively and was coming from the direction of a thicket which runs alongside the field. Now, according to this woman, from a distance, the figure appeared huge in build and covered in hair. She sensed it really wasn't real, but it gave off an air of malevolence. The figure marched toward her, and she could see it had long hair and a beard covering most of its face. She said the creature was bigger than 6 feet and appeared to have a loincloth wrapped around its waist, and it was wearing furred boots. Now, nobody else saw the figure, but she was intrigued as she knew that in the past several witnesses had come forward to say they had seen similar figures in the woods within miles of Bluebell Hill. Arnold said that these stories put him on an intriguing and alternative pathway. I began to wonder, he said, if people had seen from a distance some type of ghostly primitive man, long hair, bearded, muscular, animal fur around the waist, who, from several hundred yards away or in ill light, might have looked as if he was covered in hair. Now, Bluebell Hill and much of Kent, in fact, is steeped in history. So maybe people were seeing a reflection, if you will, of a Neolithic hunter. Now, the psychic friend of his was intrigued by what he said, and then she said, on another occasion, while in the area of the stone, she had seen several of these people. She felt just they weren't aggressive, and although armed with spears, were simply guarding the area and stooping low in the bushes, curious as to what they were seeing. I mean, if you started seeing things that you knew didn't fit in with your surroundings, you might be a little hesitant about coming out. Well, let's talk about the Bolam Beast. In the early 2000s, much of England found itself in the grip of a wave of bizarre stories about Sasquatch-type creatures being seen. John Downs, the director of the Center for Fortean Zoology, was someone who was at the forefront of these investigations. And 10 years later, he still recalls the affair. He said there occurred a huge flap of big hairy men sightings throughout the British Isles that we couldn't afford to ignore, and we felt required our immediate attention. Such was the scale of this extraordinary wave of encounters that even as we made firm plans for an expedition in March, a handful of new sightings of these large man-beasts from the Belem Lake area of Northumberland, England, arrived in our email inbox in January. So we made an immediate study of the evidence. It was a bitterly cold winter morning when John Downs, Center for Fortean Zoology, hit the road. The trip turned out to be a fortuitous this one, though. There was distinct high strangeness afoot, as he recalled. Then after arriving on site, a veritable wave of paranormal chaos erupted in the direct vicinity of Bolam Lake. Now, we'd tested all our electronic equipment the night before and charged up batteries where necessary and even put in new batteries and all our equipment that needed them. Practically without exception, all of our new equipment failed. The laptop, for example, which has a battery, usually it lasts between 20 and 35 minutes, lasted just 3 minutes before it failed. Admittedly, we got an enormous number of telephone calls during our stay at the lake, but not anywhere near enough to justify the fact we had to change handsets 4 times in as many hours. And the batteries in our tape recorders immediately failed. Seems certain that there was some strange electromagnetic phenomena at work here. He said they met with a witness named Neil who'd been fishing at Baldwin Lake one night 4 or 5 years previously. Together with two companions, he'd been making his way back to the car park when they encountered a huge, dark, man-shaped object about 7 or 8 feet in height with sparkling eyes. Three fishermen didn't stop to investigate what they'd encountered, but instead made a quick retreat to the car. Of course, this was by no means the only encounter that Neil had to report. Together with one of his companions from the first adventure, he'd have been again night fishing at Bolam Lake during the summer of 2002. They'd been camped out on this occasion and heard noise, which they assumed was from an enormous animal moving around in the bushes outside their camp. And deciding that discretion was most definitely the better part of valor, they decided they weren't going to investigate those noises. But when they broke camp, the next morning they found that the Fish had stored in a bait tin had been taken, and there were distinct signs that something very large had been lumbering around in the immediate vicinity. As the investigation came to its close, as the dark skies of winter closed in, something extraordinary and menacing occurred at Bolam Lake. According to Downs, at about 4:30, one of the members of the Twilight Whirls, that's a research group that had gone to the area, reported seeing something large, human-shaped, amorphous in the woods directly in front of the car park. As the dusk gathered at about 5:00, we again heard the raucous noise of the crows that had been reported just before dawn. Suddenly, they fell silent. One of the Twilight World members shouted that they could hear something large moving around in the undergrowth. All the car drivers present were ordered to switch on their headlights and put them on full beam. Now, they said they didn't hear any noise in the undergrowth, although other people present did. 8 people are watching the woods, and 5 saw an enormous man-shaped object run from right to left, disappear, and in a few minutes later run back again. The most amazing aspect of the encounter, though, was that the hulking racing thing was one-dimensional, shadow-like, utterly lacking in any sort of 3D substance. But even so, still some form of mystifying entity in its own right. But the bizarre event, they said, was over in just an instant. But it changed the life of a lot of people. Then, let's talk about what's been referred to as the Boulder Bigfoot. You know, the question is often raised by those who doubt the existence of such beasts as a Loch Ness Monster, Chupacabra, the Abominable Snowman, and others. But they ask, does anyone think the people they've interviewed about sightings would appear to be unknown animals of distinctly enormous nature are lying or exaggerating? Well, in the overwhelming majority of all the cases that have been studied, the interviewers respond with a firm no. That being said, of course, of every 10 reports, 2 or 3 are probably exaggerations or perhaps outright lies. There was an individual named Gavin who claimed a truly sensational encounter with a Bigfoot-like entity in the county of Staffordshire in England back in the 90s. That incident reportedly occurred within the depths of the nation's expansive Cannock Chase Woods, which has a lot of stories about bizarre happenings there. And at the site of one of the area's most famous attractions, the Glacier Boulder. Made out of granite, that boulder is large and impressive. It's also made highly curious by virtue of the illuminating fact that there are no natural granite outcrops anywhere in the area. So the question becomes, where did the rock come from in the beginning? Indeed, the nearest rock of this specific type can be found within the picturesque confines of the Lake District, which is more than 120 miles to the north, and on Dartmoor in Devonshire, no less than 165 miles to the southwest. Now, the boulder itself has been matched conclusively to a light rocky outcrop at Criffel in Dumfries and Galloway, which is only over 170 miles from Cannock Chase Woods in the southern uplands of Scotland. At some point during the last ice age, it's now generally accepted, this great boulder was apparently carried by massive glaciers down the length of the British Isles to its present location. Now, the experience that Gavin reported happened on a winter's night in 1997. He and his girlfriend were parked in his car near the boulder doing what courting couples have done since the invention of the automobile, when his girlfriend suddenly let out a loud and hysterical scream. Standing on top of the boulder was a large hairy man, waving his arms in a wild, crazed fashion. Now, Gavin got into the front seat of the car and floored the accelerator. Tires spun, dirt flew in the air, and the car shot away at high speed. But not before, according to Gavin, the creature managed to jump onto the hood of his car. And for over 5 minutes, it hung on before finally being thrown to the ground. After it hit the ground, Gavin looked in his rearview mirror and was horrified to see the creatures back on its feet and running at high speed into the depths of the surrounding countryside. Now, in fairness to those who have a skeptical outlook, it has to be said at this point that several other people have also met this man, and they're convinced that his tale is simply that, a tale of the tallest, more outrageous variety, nothing more. For his part, he's been careful time and time again to point out in response he's got nothing to gain by making it up, and just absolutely about everything to lose by fabricating a strange and unbelievable story. Well, he's not wrong about that. Claiming to all and sundry that you've seen a Bigfoot roaming around the Cannock Chase at night is, unfortunately, unlikely to result in anything other than the rolling of eyes, a shaking of head, and overwhelming hoots of both derision and laughter. But it should also be noted that sightings of Bigfoot-type creatures on and around the Cannock Chase absolutely abound. And have done so for centuries. In fact, one researcher reported he had over 30 or 40 such reports spanning more than 130 years. Typically, the witnesses described something very similar to what was seen by Gavin and his girlfriend. A large, powerful-looking man-beast that typically surfaces at night. And this is not the only case on record where a Cannock Chase Bigfoots attacked a car. 2002, a man named Craig Blackmore found himself caught up in a near-identical late-night situation when a Bigfoot-like animal lunged at his vehicle as he drove through the darkened depths of the Cannock Chase. The story, of course, made the local media and provoked intense interest and debate regarding what might lurk in those thick woods. Well, you can't... How do you prove a negative? You can't prove something didn't happen. And, of course, Gavin can't prove that it did. And the admittedly sensational and almost over-the-top plot line suggests caution in accepting the entire story. Well, leaving Castle Chase, let's talk about Staffordshire's Castle Ring. Now, beyond any shadow of a doubt, the absolute strangest story I've come across of not just a British wild man of prehistoric proportions, but of apparently a whole tribe of them, comes from the Staffordshire's Castle Ring. And it was related many years ago by a witness by the name of Pauline Charlesworth. When you examine her testimony, the experience she underwent occurred in some sort of highly altered state. And you might even state that it was a bizarre visionary state. According to Pauline, it was a bright, summery day in July of 1986 when her strange encounter occurred. She worked on Saturdays, and she had a regular day off work during the week and had chosen on this particular day to prepare a picnic basket and go take a trip up to Castle Ring. And when she got there, she, as we would all do, prepared for herself a comfortable place to sit, stretched out a blanket on the ground and opened up her picnic basket, took out drinks and fruit and sandwiches and all the other sundry items that people take on picnics. And for more than an hour, she sat and read a book and munched on her picnic. And then something curious happened. It was as if, she said, she was sitting inside the confines of a vacuum and all the surrounding noise, such as birds whistling and branches of trees swaying and making noise, stopped completely. She had the feeling that things just weren't quite right. She said the best way she could describe it is to say, like I wasn't really on the chase. It was as if I was in somebody's dream of what the chase should look like. It was as if everything was a mirage, but a very good one. Then out of the trees came a horrific form running directly toward her. And she described that form as a man, but quite unlike any that she'd ever seen before. He had long, filthy hair, a matted beard, and a dumpy face, far more historic than modern in appearance. Relatively short in height, probably no more than 5 feet two, and clad in animal skins that extended from his waist to his knees, and he had a long piece of animal skin draped over his right shoulder. And in his right hand, he had what was undoubtedly the large antlers of a deer that had been expertly fashioned into a dagger-like weapon. It looked as if it could inflict some serious damage if needed. Now, Pauline said it was difficult to ascertain who was the more scared by this encounter, her or the man. And while she stared at him in stark terror, he eyed her curiously in what Pauline describes as disturbing and sinister fashion. On several occasions, he uttered what sounded like the words of an unknown language. She said it sounded like he was angry and firing questions at me. In the distance, she said she could hear other voices getting closer and closer, and those voices collectively and ultimately grew into a literal crescendo. And then she found out the source of that noise. Through a break in the trees came maybe 30 or 40 more similar clad people, mostly men, but also a few women, and all chanting in an unknown and presumably ancient tongue. Soon made clear to Pauline that some sort of significant ceremony was going to take place inside Castle Ring, and she no less was right in the heart of all the action. The men and women proceeded to sit down at the edges of the ring, one man, taller than the rest, and who she assumed was the leader of the group, marched over to her and said something wholly unintelligible. But she understood by the wave of his arm that she'd get out of the ring. She quickly did that and retreated with shaking legs to the tree line. For more than 15 minutes she sat, transfixed with overwhelming terror by the sight, as this curious band of people continued to chant and sway in rhythmic, hypnotic fashion. And then out of the sky came the most horrific thing that she had ever seen in her life. She said it was a creature about 4 feet high, human in shape, with oily, greasy black skin, thin arms and legs, and a pair of large bat-like weatherly wings. And for good measure, it had two hideous red glowing eyes. She said it was like the devil, maybe with a high degree of understandable justification. The creature slowly dropped to the ground and prowled around the ring for a minute, staring at one and all and emitting hideous, ear-splitting shrieks. Suddenly, 7 or 8 of the men pounced on the creature, wrestled it to the ground, and bound it firmly with rope. It fought to get loose and tore into the flesh of the men with its claws, but it was finally subdued and dragged into the forest by its 7 or 8 captors. The remainder of the party followed, and Pauline said the strange atmosphere began to lift, and the area eventually returned to original normalty. For several minutes, she just sat where she was, afraid to move. Finally, returned to her blanket, scooped up both it and her picnic basket, and ran to the car. Well, there's one other factor that simply has to be connected to the saga. The book that Pauline had taken with her to read at Castle Ring was Robert Holdstock's fantasy novel, Mythago Wood. Ironically, that book is a favorite of a lot of people. The story tells how at the end of the Second World War, one Steve Huxley goes back to England on getting the news his father's died. George Huxley had devoted his life to the exploration of the ancient Wrighthope Wood that backed up against the family home and kept detailed records of his research into this mysterious area. But Wrighthope Wood is unlike any other. It's inhabited by the Mythagos of the book's title. And what exactly might they be? They are creatures and characters from British folklore and mythology, such as Robin Hood and King Arthur, whose curious existence is directly tied to the imaginations and minds of those who believe in them, and who in unconscious collective fashion help bring them to some form of quasi-independent life in the depths of the magical Wrighthope Wood. Of course, in view of the Wrighthope Wood connection, the skeptic would say that Pauline's unearthly experience is the result of a bizarre dream, or the absolute worst of all nightmares, perhaps. And maybe that's what it was. However, more than 25 years later, Pauline herself is still convinced that something very strange and diabolically evil happened that summer day in July of 1986. And she got a unique glimpse into Staffordshire's very ancient past. Well, from England, let's go to Japan. Talk about Habagon, the Japanese Bigfoot. July 1973, a strange sensational story surfaced in the media that put an entirely new slant on the world of monsters. Some of them, at least, may be the products of radioactive contamination. Well, according to this story, a dreadful real-life monster that looks like an ape and smells like decaying flesh had been observed by several reliable witnesses in the mountains of Japan near Hiroshima. Creature may be the product of a mutation from the deadly atomic radiation released when the first A-bomb was dropped on that city, Morton. Lord. 25 years before the date that this story happened. Creature. Eyewitnesses' reports indicate the monster lurks amid the low shrubbery clinging to the foothills of Mount Hiba. The area, one of the few wildernesses that Teeming Nations preserved, includes Hibayama National Park. Can't talk. According to the article, a typical sighting of the creature is reported by one Mr. Sazawa, owner of a dry goods store near the town of Saijo. Mr. Sazawa was scrambling through the foothills digging wild sweet potatoes when he saw the creature. He said it was about 5 feet tall, with a face shaped like an inverted triangle, covered with bristles, having a snub nose and a large, deep, glaring eyes. He's certain what he saw wasn't a monkey, because monkeys in Japan grow no taller than 3 feet at the most. The accumulation of these and other bits of data has led to increasingly intense speculation. Could it be a gorilla? Or how about a wild man? Maybe a deserter from the Japanese army, still hiding in fear. Or could it be the offspring of some unfortunate peasant grossly deformed by the ravages of atomic radiation? It's intriguing to note that during the course of his research, the person who wrote the material that I'm reading had a similar encounter to that of Mr. Sazawa, but he had it in 1972. Mr. Rico Harada, 46, a seamstress from the town of Hiwa, was the witness. Walking home with her small son, Ms. Harada was alerted by the sound of rustling in the underbrush. Then she saw something that looked like a gorilla standing at the roadside. Raised its arm, she said, as though begging her to stop. His face was chocolate brown, body covered with dark hair. She told the press, "When I saw that creature, I suddenly went numb. I couldn't walk. I started shaking with fear, and somehow I got up the nerve to pick up my little boy and run." That very same evening, the press noted, four residents armed themselves heavily and went hunting for the creature. They didn't see anything but trampled shrubbery, but one did report. The place smelled like a dead body after it starts decomposing. Whatever the true nature and identity of the Japanese Bigfoot, it failed to be identified by the authorities. And although it's still occasionally seen, it remains as elusive as its far more well-known American counterpart. From Japan, let's go to Minnesota and talk about the Iceman. Over the years, a number of people within the field of cryptozoology have made controversial claims they've had or have had in their possession nothing less than remains of a dead Bigfoot. Thus far, absolutely none of these claims have proved to be genuine. But there is one case in particular many researchers of the Bigfoot phenomena suspect may be utterly true. And that's the strange saga of the Minnesota Iceman. Now, Frank Hansen was a man who gained deep notoriety when in the middle 1960s he maintained he'd acquired the remains of an unusual creature, part human, part ape. There were problems with that story from the start, not the least of which was from whom precisely he'd acquired the creature. Initial story was that the well-preserved corpse had been found floating in a block of ice, no less, on the ocean waves off of Siberia. Reportedly, it was seen bobbing up and down in the freezing water by the crew of a boat in that area, who wasted no time hauling it on board. Well, that's all well and good. Maybe it's exactly what happened, but on the other hand, Maybe not. A second story links the body of the Iceman to Hong Kong rather than the waters of Siberia. This story maintains, of course, was found in the Hong Kong deep freeze and secretly dispatched to the U.S. There's another theory that the creature was shot by U.S. troops at the height of the Vietnam War. Suspicions that the creature was actually killed in Bemidji, Minnesota by a hunter, Helen Westering, was the special effects-based work of Warren Howard Ball, who was employed by the Walt Disney Corporation, also made the rounds for a while. Even the FBI got in the act, seeking to determine if the body was actually human. Was it Homo sapien or something else? Maybe even a relic Neanderthal. Whatever may have been the origin of the Minnesota Iceman, the word was that the body finally made its winding way to a still unknown figure in California, who had a sizable amount of money that allowed that person to buy the potentially priceless remains. Now, according to rumor, the anonymous buyer was none other than actor Jimmy Stewart, who certainly was deeply fascinated by the controversy over the Yeti. True or not, the unknown individual did a deal with Hansen to have the latter exhibited at a number of state fairs across the U.S. and Canada. When Hansen got the body, though, he realized this was not a monster. Although covered in hair and savage-looking, it did have distinct human qualities as well. Not surprisingly, the cryptozoological community eventually heard of the story and wasted no time trying to figure out what was going on and what exactly Hansen was displaying for his amazed audiences. Among those who had the opportunity to check out the Minnesota Iceman were two highly regarded cryptozoologists, Bernard Hevelsman and Ivan T. Sanderson. Fortunately, the pair had the opportunity to do so, not in the hectic, crowded atmosphere of a state fair, but at Hansen's own residence. And both men were sure they were looking at something that had once lived. Even through the ice, the smell of stomach churning, rotting meat pervaded. The body didn't appear to be a dummy or some form of special effect. And of course, the two cryptozoologists, goes without saying, were excited. Excitement changed to puzzlement and frustration when the body soon disappeared. Back to the unidentified individual who had placed it in the hands of Frank Hansen in the first place. And that wasn't the end of the story, of course. According to Hansen, after the body's returned to its owner, he was given a lifelike mannequin of the real Iceman. It was a mannequin that Hansen happily toured with for decades. And that fake is on display for the public at the Austin, Texas-based Museum of the Weird. As for the real Minnesota Iceman, presuming it wasn't a con on the part of Hansen, his current resting place remains unknown. But if, in fact, it was a real creature, then that does raise all kinds of unanswered questions. Well, that's the end of our presentation for today. We'll be back tomorrow and talk about more strange creatures. But I want to leave you with this thought. What if Sasquatch, Bigfoot, whatever you want to call him, is real? That raises more questions than we can possibly get answers to. Well, having given you that thought, I want you to enjoy your evening. And we'll be back tomorrow. And once again, if you listen to Ken Hudnall and the Ken Hudnall Show, until then, have a truly great evening.